Chapter 2. The violent combustions and flares of Firetide lit up the whole sky, as if the entire galaxy was burning. The flickering brilliance cast strange, jumping shadows from the bastion and its surrounding peaks out across the dust of the lagoon, which now looked yellow in the changing light. Still only moving at a low coasting speed, the Hinterlight moved well clear of the Reach's void dock area and soared out over the brilliance of the lagoon, passing other ships resting at low anchor. Astern, but moving much faster and accelerating on 75% thrust, the bulk lifter left the hangar in the cliff-like wall of the bastion and gave chase. The distance between the vessels began to close. On the Hinterlight's bridge, Madsen settled into the primary helm position beside the central command throne, from which Hullstrom was running the ship. A particularly brilliant solar surge caused the main pict source displays to distort and fizzle. Madsen winced at the glare and adjusted down the display resolution to dim the effects.
"All right?" she asked Hullstrom.
Hullstrom's brow was furrowed, as if he was concentrating hard. Every few moments, the muscles of his face gave a tick or a little spasm.
"Kensky," she repeated, "everything all right?"
"Yes," Hullstrom's voice replied, flat and dead. "He's fighting me, that's all. Every step of the way."
Kinski's body lay limp in the chair of the secondary helm station behind him. An unfinished game of regicide glowed on that station's display screen. Kinski's mind was inside Hullstrom's, forcing the Hinterlight's first officer to pilot the vessel. Kinski was a terribly powerful active psyker, but he had nothing like Ravenna's finesse or training. He could not wear subjects. He'd never developed the technique. But he could get inside their heads and essentially hijack them. None of Madsen's team had decent ship-mastering skills, so Kinski was coercing Hullstrom to use his expertise. It was difficult. Hullstrom was resisting. Kinski couldn't apply too much pressure for fear of burning out the shipman's mind altogether. It was a frustratingly difficult, painstaking process. Frustrating for Mamsel Madsen, too. She was a first-class tech adept and code writer, but she had zero helm training. She was beginning to wish they'd brought a pilot, too. She had assumed that a gun to the head of Hullstrom or Priest would be incentive enough when the time came. Now, just driving the Hinterlight was occupying all of Kinski's mind, when he could be put to good use elsewhere. A henobarb stood behind Kinski's recumbent form, watching over him as he always did. Every now and then he cast a look in the direction of Thonius. Thonius had recovered consciousness but remained where he had fallen, gazing wretchedly at the interlopers. A huge bruise from a henobarb's fist blotched the right side of his face. Thonius was desperate to act, but quite at a loss to know how. He was unarmed and weak, and the fall had badly jarred his damaged arm. Pain was throbbing through it so acutely he had to keep blinking tears away. Every time he moved, even slightly, a henobarb or Madsen looked his way. He doubted he'd even manage to sit up without them noticing. And if he did... Thonius looked at Frauke, flat on his back on the deck beside Kinski's chair. The bloodstain across the front of his shirt was huge and dark, and a pool of blood was spreading wide across the deck under his torso. Frauke had never been a friend, really, but he'd been all right. No one deserved that kind of ruthless demise. For the umpteenth time, Thonius cast a look at Ravenna's inert chair. He gazed at the psionic nullifier unit, mag-clamped like a giant barnacle to the front of the chair's casing, wishing it, willing it to fall off or deactivate. Mentally, he turned over every possible idea he could think of for removing the nullifier. Every scenario ended with him dead on the bridge floor. Aching pain was weakening him. Thonius began to wonder if he was simply not brave enough. He'd always thought of himself as brave, until the heathen moot on Flint. Look how bravery had abandoned him there. He fought off the memory. He was an agent of the throne. Bravery was expected of him. Maybe he should just get up and have a go. Damn the consequences. Then he thought of Hullstrom. Hullstrom had been brave. He'd refused to cooperate, even with Madsen's gun at his head. And look how much good his bravery had accomplished. A vox chime sounded, and Madsen looked to her console. "Hinterlight, go," she said.
"Lifter, We're inbound for rendezvous. Request you keep your course and speed and open your hangar.
Stand by, Lifter, Madsen said. She looked over at Hallstrom. You hear that?
Yes,
said Kinski, via Hallstrom's leaden, weighted voice. His fingers moved heavily across the command console keys.
I'll hold this vector steady, open the port hangar, and light the guide paths.
Good, Madsen said. She turned back to her console and tapped in a series of instructions. Lifter, this is Hinterlight.
Read you, Hinterlight.
Port hangar is opening. Link your transponder to the guide signal and get aboard. Make it quick, please.
Understood, the Vox answered, distorting a little in time to a brighter-than-average solar flare outside.
You've got them all? Madsen asked.
All three.
Soon as you're aboard, have them taken to the light cargo holds on 4.
Light cargo holds on deck 4. Got it.
And get the lifter prepped for turnaround. We're on a clock here.
Understood, Hinterlight. Lifter out.
Madsen closed the channel and lit up an Auspex display that showed a small blinking rune closing in on the port side of the larger icon that represented the Hinterlight.
They're coming in, she said.
I know, Hallstrom said, with effort.
There was another Vox chime, but it was from the internal intercom system.
Madsen, it's Skull. We've finished our sweep. Got most of them.
What does most of them mean, Mr. Skull?
Madsen replied, acidly.
46 persons, including the navigator. No sign of the females you mentioned.
I'm coming down, Madsen said. She got to her feet and looked at a Hennebarb. Watch him, she ordered, indicating both Kinski and Hallstrom.
Always,
the giant answered. Madsen looked at Thonius and gestured with her pistol.
On your feet, interrogator. Time to join the others.
Thonius got up slowly. It was a painful process.
Madsen,
Hallstrom asked without looking round. He was still staring intently at the readout displays, his fingers moving with over-careful precision on the controls.
What?
Take him with you,
Hallstrom replied, gesturing at Ravenna's chair with one hand.
I don't want him here. Makes me uneasy.
Over here, Madsen snarled at Thonius. He limped over. Disengage him and bring him.
Thonius nodded. He crouched down and disconnected the psi booster cables from Ravenna's chair and closed the access ports. Then he reached under the chair body and deactivated the mag clamps that held it fast to the deck. Even with one hand, it wasn't difficult to push the chair around on its frictionless grav plates. For a moment, Thonius looked at the nullifier clamped to the chair's body. It was within reach. How did it detach? Could he do it with one hand? With a simple tug? Could he do it before they realized? Was he brave enough?
Don't even think about it, Madsen said.
She was staring at him, mocking. She knew exactly how brave he was. And that was not remotely enough. The hold space of the bulk lifter was a battered, worn, poorly lit box of metal, its floor and walls scarred and dented by centuries of cargo handling. Nail, Mathewin, and Priest sat in one corner against the wall in a silent huddle, watched over by Verlaine and Gorgi. Free from the weapon restrictions of Bonner's reach, Verlaine was covering them with a las pistol, and Gorgi had an auto-snub. Gorgi had stopped fiddling with his damaged face and was now scrubbing petulantly at the bloodstains down the front of his checkered armor with a cloth.
"Here's an idea.
Give it a rest,"
said Verlaine from behind his helmet.
"Here's another. Shut the frig up,"
Gorgi replied. In the aft portion of the hold, blast hatches led through to the drive chambers. Forward, a flight of metal mesh steps led up to an open hatch through which they could just see a cockpit area, lit by instrumentation. There were two flight crewmen up there, and Fern and Sko sat at the top of the steps behind them, loading a bolt pistol. The ride was rough. Every few seconds, the lifter lurched or shivered. Fragments of metal junk and pieces of cargo packing rolled and skittered back and forth across the oil-stained hold floor.
"Coming up on it now, Fernan,"
Nail heard one of the flight crew call. Sko got up and leaned in through the flight deck hatch. He'd holstered his bolt pistol and was holding onto the hatch frame with both hands as the buffeting and jarring increased.
"We're riding something's magstream,"
Priest whispered to Nail.
"Shut the frig up," Gorgi said, aiming his snub at her.
Sko was talking to the flight crew.
Nail strained to hear.
As soon as we're down, you understand? Full spec turnaround and repower. I want this bird ready to fly again in 30 minutes.
No problem, said one of the crewmen.
Better not be,
said Sko, turning and sitting down again on the top step.
This is our ticket out when that hulk starts its death dive.
The blaze of Firetide was now approaching its maximum burn. The whole sky was writhing with incandescent flame patterns and scorching blooms of light. Running lights blinking, the bulk lifter edged in. It was a big craft, but entirely dwarfed by the spaceship it was closing upon. Moving sedately, the hinterlight was a colossal form ahead of it. Beneath them, the white dust of the lagoon displayed their comparative shadows, big and small, both jumping and twisting in the light of the overhead storm. The crater rim was coming up, a vast, jagged curtain of sheer black mountains. At their current rate, they would clear the lagoon in 4 minutes. The bulk lifter sped in closer, dropping thrust to match the hinterlight's pace. The massive void hatches of the hinterlight's port hangar bay were open, and strobing guide lights lit up the gaping mouth. Expertly, the bulk lifter shimmied in closer, and then banked around on a flurry of attitude jets, hard burning, and entered the bay. The void doors began to shut. The hinterlight turned its nose and began to climb in a slow westward turn. It passed over the ramparts of the crater wall, and then its massive thrust tunnels fired in a great sheet of light, and it began to power up and away into the illuminated heavens.
"We're heading into space," Zale said.
Kiss stopped and turned round to look at him.
"How could you know that?" she asked.
Until less than a month before, the boy had never even seen a spaceship. He didn't understand how they worked. He couldn't recognize the tremor of translation if it jumped up and bit him.
"I just know," he said.
He tapped his forehead.
"Nova, I tell you."
He shuddered.
"No. Well, maybe. Not in person. I just keep hearing things."
"Like what?"
Kiss asked.
"Like gravity well exit."
How would he know a phrase like that? Kiss wondered. She waved him on. The low deck corridor ahead was gloomy and creaking as the ship's mighty frame responded to the vast influence of gravity.
"Where are we going?" Zale asked.
"Enginarium," she replied. "If we can't stop the bastards taking this ship, we can maybe stop them using it."
Kiss raised the pistol she'd borrowed from Nail's cabin and led the way down the darkened tunnel. A Henobarb knelt down and stroked Kinski's limp face. He produced a cloth from his belt and dabbed away the perspiration from his partner's brow.
"You're sweating,"
he remarked.
"The bastard's making it hard for me,"
Hallstrom replied from the throne behind a Henobarb.
"Once we're done with this, I'll kill the frigger myself."
"But you're okay?"
a Henobarb asked. He could hear Hallstrom's fingers clattering over the main command controls.
"Yes, we're clear now. Commencing climb into gravity well exit."
The light cargo holds were towards the bow section of Deck 4. The hinterlight had two principal holds, a legacy to its days as a trader to accommodate gross cargo. But often, a free trader was required to ship smaller masses of high-cost goods, fine wines, artworks, precious stones. The small cargo holds were built for that purpose, a series of armored chambers that could be locked off, sealed, and, if necessary, environment-controlled individually. Fever Sko's hunters had rounded the crew of the hinterlight into small cargo 5. The entry hatch was still open, and two of the huntsmen stood sentry at the doorway. Inside, 38 terrified personnel were huddled together. Sko himself was standing in the gangway outside when Madsen arrived. The rest of his gang loitered around, leaning against walls, smoking lows, chatting. Sko was talking to Dubot. He'd just released the Carve Master from the hinterlight's holding cells. Dubot was thin and filthy. There was a wild look in his eyes, and he was compulsively rubbing his wrists, free from their shackles for the first time in a long while. They looked round as Madsen approached. She was walking behind Thonius, who was pushing Ravner's chair. Thonius was sweating and pale. Though frictionless, the chair had been hard to maneuver and direct with just one hand after all. He was shaking and exhausted. Dubot slid past Sko and strode towards Madsen.
"You bitch!" he yelled into her face. "You friggin' bitch! You knocked up my mind!"
Madsen recoiled with distaste from Dubot's wretched breath. "Get over it, Mr. Dubot," she admonished. "It was necessary."
"Necessary? Friggin' necessary?" "That's enough, Dubot,"
Sko said as he approached.
"No," Dubot cried. "Bad enough that this freak mind-frigged me every day."
He kicked the side of Ravenna's inert chair. Thonius winced.
"No, she and Kinski came at me too. They fried my mind, Sko. Fried my friggin' mind."
Sko looked at Madsen. She met his stare. "You know what's at stake here, Mr. Sko. We tolerate your little commerce on the side. Greedy? Maybe. Frick, we pay you handsomely enough. But I guess the Flex are too choice an income source for the likes of you to ignore."
"The likes of me,"
Sko said quietly. Madsen gave him a withering look. "Contract 13 is all that matters. We pay you well for your services, more than enough to cover the risks involved."
"The risks are great, mademoiselle," Sko said. "Running a fleet blockade."
"Oh, tell it to someone who cares," Madsen snapped. "We're only here today in this fix because your hungry little sideline in Flex almost gave the game away." Sko shrugged and looked at the deck. Madsen turned to face the edgy Dubot. "And for what it's worth, Mr. Dubot, of course we screwed with your mind. Yours, Siskin's, every other bastard who matted. Those were my orders. That's what I ensured Kinski did. We had to make sure none of you idiots gave the game away to the frigging Inquisition. Ravenna is a bastard, a blade-sharp bastard. Any hint of the truth, and he'd have been on us. We had to be sure that anything he learned from mind searches just drove him further and further into this trap."
Dubot glowered at her, but nodded. "No one wants the frigging Inquisition on his back," Sko conceded. He smiled at Madsen. "And my congratulations, mademoiselle. It's a fine trap you've devised. Beautifully executed. Taking the bastard's team down on Eustace would have created a terrible problem. Questions, follow-up investigations. But if his ship goes missing out here, out in Lucky Space, lost with all hands..."
"I'm glad you appreciate the finer points," Madsen said.
"You still frigged up my mind," growled Dubot.
Sko turned and slammed Dubot up against the wall.
"Live with it," Sko said into Dubot's face. "If you'd run your end of the op better, this would have never been necessary."
Sko looked over at Thonius and the chair.
"Who's that?"
he asked. "Ravenor himself," Madsen replied, "and one of his lackeys." Sko walked over to Ravenor's chair. He knelt down and embraced its hull, laying his head against it.
"You hear me? You hear me in there, you little crippled bastard? You've cost us plenty. You are going to die for that. You and all your frigging crew. All your friends. You're going to die in the heart of the local sun. And then it happens. They're all going to be as helpless and frigging useless as you."
He rose and waved over two of his hunters.
"Put the cripple in a hold all on his own," he said.
The hunters began to steer Ravenna's chair down the gangway into one of the empty holds. Sko grabbed Thonius by the shoulder.
"You're going in with the others," he said,
and Frog marched him into the small cargo 5. He kicked Thonius as they reached the door, and Thonius went sprawling onto the small hold's deck. He screamed in pain. Madsen joined Sko at the hatchway.
46, you reckon?" she asked.
"All told, Mademoiselle Madsen. 8 fatalities during the sweep. Some knacks don't know when it's a good idea to surrender."
Madsen scanned the miserable faces in the hold. "I don't see Kiss or Swole. Or, for that matter, the boy."
"We weren't told about the boy,"
Sko said. "A kid from Eustace Majoris. His name's Zale. He's not here either."
"The kills my team made were all adult males," Sko began.
"I thought you were meant to be expert huntsmen," Madsen mocked. "There are 2 adult females and a kid loose somewhere on this ship." Sko flinched slightly, his professional pride wounded. He called his men close in a huddle.
"Monks, Draco,
Guard the prisoners here. The rest of you, section this ship, deck by deck, tight hand order. 2 women, 1 boy. I'll give a bonus payment for each head you bring me.
The 9 game hunters nodded and hurried away down the hall. Madsen could hear the zip of las weapons charging up and the whir of cyber drones being launched. Madsen looked up at Sko. By the way, your brother's coming aboard just now.
He got the others?
All 3,
Madsen smiled.
Traps closed.
Mr. Thunius. Mr. Thunius.
The voice penetrated Carl's dream. It had been a nice dream. He'd been in an up-hive outfitter's on Thracian Primaris, being measured for a suit of the most gorgeous plum tansy. But the bloody tailors had kept sticking their pins into his right arm. Stab. 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 He woke up. Faces peered down at him. One of them was the medique, Zargeran. Thonius woke up fast. He was in the cell. He was a prisoner. Zargeran examined his arm.
You've burst some stitches, Mr. Thonius, he said. There is some weeping around the wound, and some tissue tearing.
Thonius looked around. He saw Magnus, the second helmsman. Clysters, the engineering chief. Kobax from the ship's galley. The navigator Twu, wrapped in a blanket. They were all frightened. Them and all the others. Scared to death. They were staring at him because he was the only member of Ravenna's personal cadre to be captured with them. They were expecting something of him. They were expecting something ridiculous. Like he'd get them out. Like he'd somehow be able to do something amazing and free them all.
Help me up, Thonius said.
Zargeran hoisted him a little. Thonius looked at the open hatchway of the hold. 2 of Sko's huntsmen stood in the frame of it, weapons ready. What kind of frigging miracle did these people want from him? He wasn't that brave. He'd never been that brave. He was Carl Thonius. He wasn't a hero at all. The pall of vapor filling the port hangar began to disperse, and the lumen strips on the interior hatches went green, indicating atmospheric equalization. The whine of the bulk lifter's thrust drive shrank away into the silence of system shutdown. On the top of the battered lifter, Kara Swole raised her head and slowly unwrapped her arms from around the bars of a lateral stanchion which she'd been clinging onto for the duration of the flight. She was shaking badly. The old vac suit had done its job, but only barely. Its insulating sublayer was poor, and her core temperature had dropped sharply. With trembling fingers, she unsealed the helmet and took it off, her teeth chattering. Her cheeks and lips felt raw with cold. From below, she heard the lock mechanism disarm on the lifter's side ramp. She pulled off the rest of the threadbare old suit as quickly as she could. There was no time to warm up, no time to feel sorry for herself. The compact rucksack she'd been carrying ever since emerging from the crate in the kitchens of the Reach was still with her. She'd strapped it around her belly and fastened the baggy vac suit up over it. Kneeling, her hands still shaking, she put the rucksack down and peeled open the seam seal. Inside it, side by side, was a matched brace of Transvasser auto-pistols. She'd been carrying them concealed as a backup for Nail's team, though given the brutal efficiency of the Vigilance, she was glad she hadn't been forced to produce one. She was fond of her hands. Even if they were shaking like hell now. She slipped the pistols out and checked the loads. Each hand grip held a clip of 30 caseless rounds. Below her, with a grating rumble, the lifter's side ramp began to unfold. First out were 2 men in dingy flight suits. They hurried into view on the hangar deck and made their way over to the banks of crew service machinery built into the hangar wall to begin a turnaround prep for the lifter. It seemed to Kara that the lifter wasn't intending to stay long.
"Let's go,"
Fernand Sko said with a nod of his head. Gorgi and Verlaine flanked the 3 prisoners as they came down the ramp, Sko at their heels.
"Any time now," Gorgi muttered to Nail. "Soon as Sko's brother gives me the nod, I'm going to mess you up bad."
"Really?"
said Nail, without interest.
"Shut up, Gorgi,"
Verlaine said.
"You shut up," Gorgi said. "I'm going to take my time and mess this one up real nasty for what he done to my face."
"What?"
asked Nail.
"Improved it?"
"You bastard!"
Gorgi barked.
"Shut up, Gorgi!"
Sko said from behind.
"Yeah, shut up, Gorgi,"
Nail agreed. Gorgie snapped. He lashed out with his left hand and smacked Nail hard across the face.
Gorgie!
Sko snarled. But the man already had his auto-snub pressed to Nail's forehead.
You frigger!
He screamed. Two shots rang out, their sounds magnified by the large chamber. Gorgie's head broke apart in a pink mist, and he tumbled backwards like he'd been yanked on a chain.
Emperor!
Priest shrilled in dismay. More shots rained down from high above them. Most were aimed at Verlaine, and they dented his battle plate with enough force to knock him down. Nail looked round. Up on the back of the lifter, Kara Swole was unloading serious fire, an auto in each hand. Mathewin grabbed Priest and pulled her down to shield her. Sprawled, but far from dead, Verlaine blazed back at Kara with his las pistol. Fernan Sko broke and ran back under the lifter, out of the field of fire. His hands still cuffed, Nail threw himself after Sko. He caught up with him beside the lifter's rear port landing gear and felled him from behind with a two-handed smash, his fingers laced together. Sko went down, and his bolt pistol skittered away across the metal decking. Firing sideways with both autos, Kara leapt along the length of the lifter's topside as Verlaine's desperate las shots sparked and careened off the bodywork around her. The two flight crew over by the hangar wall came running back, pulling auto snubs and adding to the hail of fire coming Kara's way. Nail hit Sko with both fists again, but Sko rolled and kicked out, snapping Nail's legs away. With his hands bound, he couldn't compensate his balance and fell badly. Then Sko was on him, kicking him and bending down to jab in punches. Cursing, Nail grabbed Sko's torso armor with his cuffed hands and threw Sko headfirst over him. Shots dented the hull plating around Kara, and one sliced through the fabric of her bodysuit on her left thigh. Another, one of Verlaine's las rounds, zipped past less than a hand's breadth from her cheek. With a squeal of alarm, she ducked and widened her arms, firing the weapon in her left hand at Verlaine, the one in her right at the crewmen. The latter jerked and tumbled over dead. The decking beside Verlaine punctured and holed. Nail scrambled up, but the cuffs made him clumsy, and Sko was faster. The game agent threw a punch into Nail's face that dropped him again, momentarily unconscious. Sko bent down and picked up his bolt pistol. The clips in each of Kara's guns were nearly spent. The firefight had only been running for a scant 15 seconds since the first shot, though it felt like an eternity. She'd been really hosing. She took her fingers off the triggers for a split second, ignoring the rounds exploding all around her, and took aim to make her last few loads count. She fired the left-hand gun, a single shot at Verlaine. His polished blue armor had withstood the caseless punishment, but now she hit the left eyepiece of the battle plate's visor. Verlaine's helmet snapped back, and he rolled over. Then she turned both guns on the remaining crewman and blew him apart. "Zeph!" she yelled, and hurled one of her autos into the air towards him. Nail came round just as Sko put a boot on the chain of his cuffs and pinned his arms to the ground. Sko pressed the muzzle of the bolt pistol into Nail's left eye socket. Leaping up off Priest, Mathewin reached upwards with his cuffed hands and caught the spinning auto-pistol by the grip. He swung it round and shot Fernan Sko through the heart from 20 meters. Sko lurched backwards off Nail, slammed into the lifter's landing leg, and fell on his face.
"Holy frigging throne!"
Priest murmured, dazed and terrified. Mathewin looked down at the weapon he held. The clip was out. That shot had been the last one in the mag.
"Indeed," he agreed.
Kara clambered down the side of the lifter. Blood was running from the gash in her thigh. Under the lifter, Nail rolled Sko's body over and found the mag key for the cuffs. He freed himself, picked up Sko's bolt pistol, and limped back to join the others. Kara jumped off onto the deck and smiled at him. He saw her face was pinched with cold, the lines of her nose and cheekbones florid with sunburn. The vac suit's faceplate hadn't been up to much either, especially for someone riding a lifter bareback through the fire-tide storms. Nail embraced her and held her tight for a moment.
"Glad you could make it," he said into her hair.
"Not the easiest thing I've ever done," she replied.
They got the cuffs off Priest and Mathewin. Priest gave Kara a hug too.
"I thought we'd left you behind," she said,
her voice brittle with relief.
"I thought we were going to die."
"Oh, have faith, mistress," Kara smiled. "You had Nail and Mathewin with you, the toughest sons of bitches this side of Macragge.
They'd have thought of something.
She looked at the two men, who were busy collecting weapons and ammunition from the bodies.
Wouldn't you? She said.
Mathewin shrugged.
No, I thought we were going to die too.
I had a plan, Nail said.
Sure you did,
said Mathewin.
I did,
Nail grumbled.
What? Goad that Gorgy guy into giving you a headshot,
Mathewin sneered.
It was a start. I was improvising.
Look, said Kara, I don't want to play the doomsayer, especially as Mathewin has that role covered, but we should book. This lifter was clearly expected. We've postponed death, not escaped it.
Priest looked at her. The shipmistress was badly rattled. Kara could see that. This kind of stuff was definitely not what she'd signed up for. It was like Begescus all over again. The fragile excitement she'd generated in herself at the start of the Reach expedition was evaporating fast. She was a trader, a void voyager, not a throne agent.
It'll be fine, Kara said, reloading her autos, and felt stupid saying it.
Priest just nodded.
Let's move,
Nail said. He'd armed himself with Sko's bolter and Gorgi's auto-snub tucked into his belt. Mathewin had taken Verlaine's las pistol. He handed one of the auto-snubs the flight crew had been carrying into Priest's hands.
I don't care for guns, Priest said.
Humor me. Just put it in your pocket.
Pinching the weapon between finger and thumb, as if it was a scorpion ant or a fresh stool, Priest reluctantly dropped it into the deep slash pocket of her gown. They left the hangar and slipped down the main access hallway of Deck 2. A glance told them all auxiliary systems were operating. The cold green light, the feeble air push.
My darling's running on backup, Priest said.
Nail nodded.
It's a certain someone has taken control of the Hinterlight. Question is, how do we take it back?
Kill 'em all?
Mathewin asked.
Thanks for that, Zeph, Kara smiled.
Actually, that was top of my list of workable plans,
Nail said.
We have to...
Priest began, and then stopped. She was scared, shaking. She cleared her throat before continuing.
We have to assess status, she said.
She led them away from the main access into a warren of sub-corridors that threaded the space between the primary holds to bow and the engineerium and drive chambers to stern. Progress was easy. All internal doors and hatches were locked open.
Just down here, she said.
What are we looking for?
Asked Nail.
Diagnostic stations, Priest said. There are about 30 located at various points on the ship. They're for maintenance. Senior personnel can check all aspects of ship status from any of them.
They reached a cross-junction in the dim sub-hallways. The diagnostic station was a shielded drum rising out of the deck at the center of the cross. Priest slid back a cover to reveal the console.
It needs the ship's master keys to operate it, she said.
How do we...
Nail began. Priest removed her preposterously dangly earrings. The master keys, Nail realized, were the main parts of each. She slid the keys into the paired sockets and turned both simultaneously. The console display shivered into life. Peering at the display, Priest began to touch some keys.
Shit, she said.
Shit,
repeated Nail.
I see what they're doing, Priest murmured.
Which is?
Nail asked.
The bastards, Priest added.
Which bastards?
Nail said.
Damn it, that's clever.
What is?
Nail asked, exasperated. Priest looked at him at last and pointed at the screen.
Someone's rewritten the authority codes of my darling ship, she said. Clever, clever, clever. Basically, they've shut down and locked all my darling's primary systems. All of them, from drive and life support right down to lighting, and initialized all the secondary and auxiliary systems in preference. The Hinterlight is working on backup, and that network has been entirely secured.
Can you countermand?
Nail asked.
No, that's the point. The clever part.
This is a countermand. It's personally encrypted. Whoever did this was a genius. They've taken over the ship using my own back door.
So what you're saying is that we are totally screwed,
Mathewin said. Priest took a deep breath and removed her keys, shutting the console down.
No, Mr. Mathewin. Nearly screwed, but not totally.
Spit it out, mistress, Kara snapped.
Priest smiled at her. My dear, no ship mistress worth her salt, no rogue trader leaves herself open to this kind of piracy.
I have secret core-level protocols to overwrite this kind of crap. Whoever did this hasn't found those.
So that's good, Nail ventured.
Get me to the bridge, and I'll punch in a few codes that will unlock the entire system, Priest said.
I'm thinking the bridge is probably not an option at this stage, Nail said.
Priest nodded, as if she had expected that answer. All right, get me to Enginarium Basic on Deck 6, right down at the stern. Main cogitator is housed under the bridge itself, but there's a redundant secondary cogitation stack concealed behind the principal drive chambers. In case of emergencies, damage to the main cogitators or whatever, I can work my magic from there.
Nail nodded. Good. Great, in fact. But that's a long march from here.
Priest shrugged.
Right, Nail said. Zeph, get the mistress down to this backup stack. Can you do that?
I can try, said Mathewin.
What will you be doing? Me and Kara will be heading upstairs to work to the original plan.
Kill 'em all? Kara asked.
Kill 'em all, said Nail.
Ravana had been pushed into a small cargo hold, 40 meters down from the hold containing the rest of the ship's crew. It was dark. The door was sealed. The light on the latched-on nullifier flashed in the gloom. The hold's hatch opened, and green orc's light fell in at a slant. A figure filled the doorway.
You're a bastard. A friggin' bastard,
Dubose said as he shuffled into the hold space.
You hear me, you friggin' bastard? You friggin' nookwipe. I hope so. I hope you do. This is all 'cause of you.
Dubose faced the chair. He raised the boarding axe he'd pulled from a wall mount. With both hands, he turned the heavy weapon so the back of the axe head, the pick, was lowered.
A good deal I had,
Dubose burbled.
A good trade. Then you and your freaks came in to frig it up. You know what?
Dubose asked, as if somehow expecting Ravana to answer.
You know what? This is payback time.
Dubose hefted the axe up and slammed it against the chair's hull. Sparks flew. The blow had barely made a scratch on the chair's surface. Dubose struck again and again. Apart from a very few slight scratches, his attacks had made no dent, though they had pushed the frictionless chair across the chamber. Cursing, Dubose put his foot against the chair and kicked it over against the far side of the hold. It slid away and came to rest, bouncing off the wall. Dubose ran at it and delivered another massive blow. He began to hack away with the boarding axe, driving the chair against the wall so it couldn't roll away. Chips of paint began to fleck off the chair's chassis, and dents began to appear as Dubose threw blow after unrelenting blow at it.